It's so good to be here. I came up from Calgary to my parents yesterday, and then today me and my dad made the drive up. And I'm actually here to tell you a story about God's faithfulness and how behind the scenes he is working. So it's amazing how he just kind of works, and it's like me and the worship pastor, we didn't talk about what I was talking about tonight, but it's cool just how God kind of orchestrates things. So this January, we were over in Whistler, BC, the host of the 2010 Olympic Games, and we were competing out there. So this was the highlight reel from there. We got gold. The Americans were behind us in silver, and the Austrian team got bronze. What a rush, eh? I don't know if that was kind of fun to watch. I liked watching it. I don't know if any of you guys caught what the times were at the end. It's kind of one of those things where you're like, numbers, names, whatever. It's like when you get to that part in the Bible when you see like the list of the names and the genealogies and you kind of skip it. Same thing. but we won that race by 15 hundredths of a second. I don't know if that means anything to you guys, really. But another number, essentially, that comes from that race that they didn't show was the start time, the first 50 meters of the track. It took us 5.13 seconds to get that sled moving for the first 50 meters of the track. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's it. That's my job. That's my full-time job, pushing a sled for about 5 seconds as hard as I possibly can. I get in, and then I sit as still as possible. But yeah, that is my job. More or less of that time actually may be spent inside the sled, depending how steep the track is. The tracks that are steeper, of course, you're getting in earlier because you can't keep up to that sled and you don't want to slow it down. So depending on the track, more or less that 5 seconds is spent inside the sled. Once I'm in, like I said, my job is to literally sit as still as humanly possible and just hope and pray that my pilot in the front seat gets us down the track safe and fast. And let me tell you, sometimes we hit speeds of up to 150 kilometers per hour. We get up to 5 G's of pressure in some corners, which if we had that sustained pressure, that's enough to black out, actually. It's the same as what some of your fighter pilots, when they take off like this, they can hit 5, 6 kind of G's. So that's the kind of pressures we're playing with. So sitting still, as much as it could sound easy, isn't. I really need to know the track, which way it turns, the lefts, the rights, the pressure. More importantly, where there's no pressure. Because if there's no pressure and I'm moving around in the back of the sled, I can actually put the sled into a skid. The dreaded skid. I don't know if you guys saw at the very end of that video, Kaylee and I, as we kind of crossed the finish line, we skidded a little bit. Sometimes a skid at the very end of a race, for instance, isn't a huge deal. But by and large, skids, they're game changers. A skid means you're bleeding time all over the place. You're killing speed and time that you really can't afford to lose. They're always bad. You're always going to lose a ton of time, but sometimes they're deadly. If you're going to skid going into what we call an uphill section of the track, exactly what it sounds, you're going to kill a lot of speed, a lot of momentum. You can kiss a good finish time goodbye. If you skid at the top of the track, that's a no-no as well. If you skid at the top of the track, good luck trying to find speed at the bottom and have a good time as a result. It's just not going to happen. So if I feel a tap, I know that it might be okay. We're going to lose a little bit of time, but as long as you don't go into that skid. Like I said, we only won that race by 15 hundredths of a second. So a skid, as much as it may seem simple or insignificant in my sport, that's huge. 15 hundredths makes a huge difference. Literally every second, every tenth, every hundredth of a second makes a difference. And I know you're probably sitting there thinking, you're like, okay, tenth, hundredth, what does it actually look like? So I need a volunteer. I saw your hand first. Come up here. Okay, so what is your name?
Zion.
Zion? Okay, and how old are you?
13.
Okay, and a skill testing question. Do you know how to count to 10?
Yes.
Okay, good. then you will work perfectly. So in a tenth of a second, there is essentially 10 in a second. So what we're going to do is I'm going to count to 1/1,000, and I need you to count to 10 before I finish. So we're going to go on the count to 3. Do you think you can do it?
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
1/1,000.
I think I finished first, didn't I? Do you want to try again? Okay, ready? You jumped the gun. Okay. Calm down. Okay, ready? 1/1,000. Super hard, hey? Do you like Smarties or Kit Kats? Kit Kat? Here you go. Thank you so much. So if you could count to 10 before I said 1/1000, that's what a tenth of a second would be. Now imagine trying to count to 100. That's 1/100th of a second. That's how small of a time frame we're talking about. And the reality is that 1500ths that we talked about, that we won that race by, in my sport, that's actually quite a bit. The day before, in the men's two-man race, it was so terribly close, there actually was a tie. In my sport, they measure it to 1/100th of a second. So to 1/100th of a second, the Korean team and the Swiss team were the exact same after two runs. 1/100th of a second behind them was the Russians. And 1/100th of a second behind that was the Latvians. The Latvians missed gold by 2/100ths of a second. Wow. Isn't that crazy? So in my sport, as you can tell, literally everything makes a difference. Every tenth, every hundredth. And do you want me to let you in on a little secret? At the start of the track, when we're pushing, they say all things equal on the way down. Same driving skills, same equipment kind of thing. A tenth of a start difference, or 1/100th of a start difference, is equal to a 3/10th or 3/100th advantage at the bottom. So when we're pushing that sled, everything matters. Every single ounce of energy that I can conjure up makes a difference. So do you want to throw up that first picture there? Next one. There we go. So this is us pushing out in Park City at the start of the race. And if you go to the next slide, this is how I get every 1/100th of a second out of myself that I possibly can. Preparation, focus, intentionality, perspective. On the bobsled track, mentality is literally half of the game. And a good mindset can make literally tenths or even 1/100ths of a difference. But what happens when challenges come? What happens when you start questioning why you're even here? What you're doing this for in the first place? What happens when you start to worry and you're not sure you can do it anymore, or you're not sure you're cut out for this, or that you're good enough? What happens when the voice in the back of your head becomes your own worst enemy? I don't know if you've ever been there. I have. My first year on tour, I learned firsthand just how important a healthy mind is, just how important it is to think positively, and just how dangerous it is to listen to doubt or to entertain that little voice in the back of your head. Picture this. If you want to go to the next slide there. Oh, are we out of order? Oh, this works, whatever. So picture this. We were coming off of a third place victory in Altenburg. I can still remember the music playing. As we came into the finish dock, the crowds cheering. I looked over to the side to where my coach was standing, and he had this massive smile on his face as he held up number one. We were sitting in first place with only two sleds to go. We were hurried over to where there's this awkward little kind of TV set up in the winner's box to watch the Belgians come down. We were hoping, praying, watching, just to see if they would mess up just enough for us to move ahead. They didn't, unfortunately. But we went over, we gave them high fives and congratulations, hugs, as they went on to the winner's box to watch if the Americans came down in front of them. We ran over to where our clothes were. I don't know if you saw in that last picture. We're not wearing a ton of clothes. It's kind of cold. So we have ski pants at the bottom. We have a ski jacket, toques, covers for our shoes, the whole nine yards. So we go over. We put that stuff on before going to the flower ceremony, getting our flowers, and being lined up for the medal ceremony. They announced sixth place, fifth place, fourth place, bronze. Kaylee Humphreys and Melissa Lotholtz. My first World Cup medal. Together, we walked up onto the stage to collect our prize. I can still remember just watching as the American, Belgium, and Canadian flags were risen up as we listened to the Star Spangled Banner. I don't think I'll ever forget that moment. I just had my eyes locked in on that maple leaf, and as it was rippling in the wind, I could just feel the shiver kind of go up and down my spine. This was so cool. It was so amazing just to be a part of something so awesome and bigger than myself. When the last notes of the American anthem finished, we all erupted into this massive cheer of celebration. But if I'm being honest, the bobsleigh life wasn't everything it was when we were on that stage. It wasn't adrenaline, cheers of celebration, tears of joy. life away from the bobsleigh track was hard. And it wasn't all that I expected. Coming into the sport, I thought, okay, bobsleigh, tour, this is going to be like the other sports I've been a part of. In university, I ran track and field. In high school, I had the opportunity to play basketball, to play volleyball, to do track, to do badminton some years. And I figured, why would this be that much different? Why wouldn't this be like those awesome trips where essentially a sports trip was you go to this hotel in some other either province or town, you get to essentially have a sleepover with all of your best friends with the added bonus of doing this sport that was awesome and you loved, and you get to explore new places. So why wouldn't bobsleigh tour be amazing? There was always something to do, someone to see, someone to talk to. But it wasn't. If you just go to the next picture, a very accurate description of what bobsleigh actually was hurry up and wait. We get to the sleds, ready to go to the track. We drive them to the track, unload them, and then we wait. Wait for training to begin. Okay, it's our turn, finally. Okay, so we warm up, we get the sled to the line, we push, we hop in, we get to the bottom, we load it back up, go to the top, and wait. Because only one sled can go down at a time, and the men's and the women's teams all practice together. So 2 hours later, maybe three, maybe four, depending if people crashed or not that day. We get back, and it's our turn again, finally. Once we finally get home, we unload the sled, we take off the runners, we maybe do some sprints, some weightlifting, throw a med ball around, and then we wait some more. Wait for therapy, wait for meetings, wait for dinner, wait just to go to sleep and do it again. In reality, there is a lot of waiting in my sport, which was kind of surprising for me. I was pretty busy as a high school student, as a university athlete, and the preseason, when we were back in Calgary, was insanely busy, and I honestly didn't think, if this is what bobsleigh tour is for 4 months, I can't handle it. Like, oh man. But it wasn't. And initially, all that downtime, all that waiting was something that I really needed. It was so good. But for an extrovert, busy person like myself, all that waiting and all that downtime got boring and old really fast. I can remember one day after sliding, just coming home to my hotel room, dropping my sliding bag on the floor, flopping onto the bed, and thinking, now what? You want to just go to the next slide? This is kind of what I felt like. Now what? I'm in the middle of nowhere. What on earth do I have to do with myself? So I did what probably, I'm going to say, almost anybody my age would do. They pulled out their phone and checked Facebook. But it wouldn't load. So you know the drill, you kind of like flick it down so it refreshes, and then you wait again. 5 minutes later, waiting, 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 nothing happened. Nothing with internet was going to be happening today. Okay, so now what? I unfolded the things in my sliding bag. I went to the bathroom, reorganized my toiletries. I made my bed again. I went to the window and I watched for cars passing by the hotel. There wasn't any cars. Where was everyone? I peeked my head out of my hotel room, looked down the hallway to see if there was somebody I recognized. No one. So I crept downstairs to the other floors. I checked the lobby. I checked the dining hall. No one. Where was everyone? I can remember climbing those three flights of stairs back up to my hotel room, sitting on my bed, and this big, just exhausted and depressing sigh kind of just escaped me. And a single tear kind of, you know, from the corner of your eye, just, it was almost like I was bored to tears, essentially. Man, like, all I wanted was for somebody to come and knock on my door and say, hey, Melissa, we're watching a movie, or hey, Mel, we're going to go play a card game. Do you want to join? I wanted something to do, somebody to do it with. And that knock, it never came. It felt like literally time was moving slower than molasses. And in that silence, a little voice in the back of my head started to grow louder. Melissa, what are you doing here? Why are you alone with nothing to do? Certainly, if you've done everything you need to do today, aren't your teammates? Where are they? What are they up to? Surely everybody can't be sitting in their rooms watching cars that don't exist. They must be up to something. And if they are, well, why didn't they invite you? My heart sunk, It felt as if I was back in elementary school and I was that little girl again who walked along the chain link fence at recess and lunch hour crying because there was only 4 girls in my grade. I went to a super small elementary and they were busy playing a 3-player game and I was the odd man out. I felt so alone. Left out, longing for better days. What on earth was I doing here? Why was I here, pushing a sled for a couple seconds every week, or a bronze medal on the weekend, or even that eluded awesome gold medal? It didn't seem like enough to justify this lifestyle I was living, or all the things I was giving up to be here. I missed home. Here on tour, it just seemed like the sum of my entire existence was to either move equipment, push a sled, and to produce medals. Apart from that role, I wasn't really anybody. I was nothing, not worth anyone's time, and it all seemed just so empty and so meaningless. And I was, you know that tension that you get in your chest when you're just so conflicted and you just don't know what to do with yourself? My mind started to race, and your heart, it just starts beating so wildly, and all of a sudden your eyes start darting around the room, looking for some kind of answer as if it was written on the wall or just standing in the middle of your room. What was I missing? That amazing dream that I was actually living and I wanted, it was becoming a living nightmare. My mind waged back and forth, trying to understand and calculate and rationalize what was going on. And by the time we got to Königssee, this beautiful little town in the south of Germany, nestled between the Bavarian Alps, the second stop after Christmas on the European chunk of our tour, by the time we got to Königssee, I was an exhausted fit of an anxiety and despair. If you want to go to the next picture, the week started off with a push-off. So essentially what this is on any given week, they can say, okay, you and you, you're going to race for the right to race. They take 2 brakemen, and we go with the same pilot. I take one training run, and the next person takes another training run. And whoever has the faster start time gets to race. So the week started off with a push-off. Okay, my first one, actually. And when all was said and done, I lost. I lost by 1/100th of a second. 1/100th. I wasn't racing. Initially, I was shocked. I just stared at the clock in disbelief. My mouth went dry. My hands, they were cold and clammy. What just happened? I lost? I knew losing in theory was a possibility, but I didn't actually think it was gonna happen. Like, even if I wasn't performing my best, I was the number one ranked brakewoman on the team. That's why I was sliding with Kaylee Humphreys. So how could I lose? 4 days ago, we had got bronze in Altenburg, that race I told you about. And we had good start times. I think we were the second or third fastest start of the entire field. So what on earth just happened? This other girl, actually, that beat me, she wasn't even a brake woman. She was a pilot that we pulled up from another circuit because we needed some help for a couple of weeks. What just happened? My clammy hands, they turned into fists as my shock turned into anger. Melissa, what on earth? How could you? 1/100th of a second? That's literally anything. Anything. You could have changed anything, and the result would have been different. Could have been better. Could have been worse, but it would have been different. It wasn't 1/100th. My goodness, what were you thinking? Were you focused enough? Were you hungry enough? Could you have run just one more step, given it one more ounce of energy? Did you really give it everything you had? Really? Truly? Everything? And then I felt something I never expected to feel. Relief. I let out the breath I didn't know I was holding. I was so tired, so played out by everything that was going on, this war that was inside of my head. Not racing was going to be so good. That was when alarm bells finally went off in my head. I had really let things go way too far. I was a mess. I was on bobsleigh tour. Shouldn't I want to be doing bobsleigh things? Racing? Like, that was the whole point we were there. So this relief, that's not right. That's not right at all. Something had to change. Just go to the next picture there. So this is us watching the TV, actually. watching the next team go by. But that expression on my face kind of feel like, I think it kind of captures what I was feeling, like what just happened. Something had to change. Something was wrong. So far, instead of dealing with the problem, I was just reacting to it. At a default, by choosing to not choose, I was just being a victim. All of the loneliness, the despair, the hurt I was feeling, the anxiousness, the worry, in my mind, it was everybody else's fault. And I was throwing myself this big pity party, and I actually found myself looking for reasons or excuses, for lies or for insults, hardships to support and to actually justify the way I was feeling and the way I was acting. See? See, look what they're doing. Look what they're doing. This is why I'm this way. This is why I feel miserable. This is why I'm angry or hurt. Look what they've done. Look what they've said. Nothing is really all that great here. And more than anything, I really just wanted to go home. I wanted to escape from it all. I didn't want to deal with it. I wanted to go home. I wanted to escape all the things about tour that made it hard. But I knew that going home and quitting halfway through the season really wasn't an answer. And it really wasn't addressing the problem. The problem was what was going on in my brain, not my circumstances. So I had two options if I wanted to make a change. I could either change things myself, or I could let God be a part of it. And don't get me wrong, it's not like I didn't want God to be a part of it before that. I asked him lots of questions and voiced lots of complaints. The thing was, I wanted him to solve my problem my way. So, you know, and it's just like, I wanted him to kind of come in like a superhero and, you know, save the day, take away my problems, or at least, you know, give me answers or a reason that would help me to endure. Or, you know, better yet, he could at least, like, just saturate me and just be like, oh, here's some love, here's some joy, here's some patience. Like, just all these good things about God. So it'd be like morphine and I didn't feel anything else. And it was just like, woohoo, cloud nine. But that wasn't really the solution. Instead, I had to wrestle through what Paul said in Philippians 4:6-7. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition with thanksgiving. Present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. If I wanted peace, the peace of God, I had to bring all the things that were bothering me, all these things that were just under my skin, and they were making me hurt or feel pain or just angry. I had to bring them to God, and not in the way I did before, where it was like a list of complaints and God, can you do this? Can you do that? Presenting my requests to God and actually like bringing them to him, it meant that I had to be willing to actually leave it at his feet. All these things I was struggling with, all those thoughts, those feelings, the rights I thought I had, like the right to feel the way I did, or the right to have answers or reasons. Even my rights to feel accepted, to have community, to have meaning or purpose in what I was doing, or my right to be happy. God was asking me to let go of all those things, to cast my cares and my burdens onto him. And to do it, I had to choose trust. Because if I surrendered it, I would also be giving up my right to fix my own problem or to have my problem fixed the way I wanted it to be fixed. So I could give everything up. And everything could change. God could come in and save the day and be like, here, Melissa, I'll take away your problems. Or here, Melissa, this is why. Like, I'm just going to tell you this, and now you can endure. Or Melissa, you know what? Here is my love. Here is my joy. Here is my peace. Here is my patience. And it would just be all better, even though the circumstance didn't change. But on the other hand, my circumstance might stay the same, and I wouldn't get any of those things. I might have to just continue to endure, to walk in faith, to walk in trust, not knowing, not understanding, through the same old hard stuff. And that's hard. I don't know if you've been there, but that's hard. That's really hard, just to let go of all those things and to bring your requests to God. But I love how this verse says to bring it to God with thanksgiving. And I love that last song we sang and what we were talking about and how it's just, how I don't know wherever he went, but how he was saying, maybe you had a hard circumstance and the only way you could get through it was to praise. with thanksgiving, with praise. Man, just think about it, though. Think about who God is. We sang in that song that he is holy, that he is mighty. God is love. He promises to never leave us or forsake us. He is in control. He's sovereign. He has a plan, and his ways are above our ways, and his thoughts are above our thoughts. He promises to watch over us, and it says in his word that there's going to be a voice behind us telling us this is the way, walk in it, to the right or to the left. And it says that this good work he has started in us, he will finish. He calls us children. He adores us. He watches over us. And it says in Zephaniah that he even rejoices over us with singing. And just think about the cross even. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, coming to earth, dying for us, taking all our sins, our problems, if we would just let him, in exchange for new life, everlasting life. As I thought about all that, as I chose to give thanks and praise, I recognized that God doesn't promise that by surrendering to him, he's going to change our circumstances. But better than that, he promises to change us. In him, it says that we are a new creation, that behold, the old has passed away and the new has come. He gives us life. He renews our minds. He transforms us from glory to glory for his ultimate glory. And isn't that just great? Isn't that awesome that we have a God that would do that for us? Choosing to fix our eyes on Jesus and on his promises, on who he was, focusing on truth and giving thanks for truth and the things that I could be thankful for apart from that. Even the fact that I was on bobsleigh tour, that was something to be thankful for in itself, that I could represent my country, that I could do the things I was doing. I wasn't seeing that before. Giving thanks, it changed my perspective. It changed the way I saw my problem. My problem, it was so small. Giving thanks, it forced me to not look at the things that were hurting me or the things that were wrong. It forced me to see something bigger, to see something better. And it made it so much easier to actually give him my problems and to surrender it to him, because he is good. He's a God we can trust with all of our problems and with all of ourselves. I'm not going to tell you it was easy. I'm not going to tell you that it was like that. It was a one-moment decision. It was definitely a process. It was something that I had to do day after day and hour after hour. But slowly, as I let go of the death grip I had on my problems and on my situation, and I chose to see the good things and I chose to give thanks, peace, just like this verse promises. The peace of God, which transcends all understanding, really did enter my heart, and it really did enter my mind. And it made a huge difference, both on and off the bobsleigh track. We rounded out the season with a great finish. Do you want to go to the next picture? This is, is there one in between? That one. This is Kaylee and I in Russia. It was the very last stop of the World Cup in my rookie year. And we had our best finish of the year there, silver. That was our third World Cup medal together. And that silver was enough to get us second overall. So that's the globe that Kaylee's holding there. We got this trophy for having the second overall points. So you could definitely say that things on the bob track turned around. But more important than that, I started to heal and to find joy again. The joy of competing, the joy of pushing myself in sport, the joy of representing my country, the joy of journeying with people, winning together, losing together, just working together and living together and growing together. And I refound purpose in what I did. I refound purpose in myself, and I refound life. When I got home from tour, there was still a lot of garbage I had to sift through in my own heart and in my mind. And there was still a lot of work ahead of me because I guess the journey wasn't a one-day process, like I said. The journey of training my heart and training my mind to see the good and to fix my eyes on things above, like we're commanded to do. That journey, it's honestly a journey that I'm still on. I was confronted actually that fall with the fear of being replaced in my role. There was a girl from the Summer Olympic team, a hurdler, that won a bronze medal in Beijing. She was a track athlete that was coming out. And before we even had a push camp, which decides everything in terms of who's sliding with who, there was newspaper articles out in like every major newspaper, CBC, the Canadian Olympic Committee, the Globe and Mail, I think the Toronto Star, that Kaylee and Priscilla were this new team. And so that came out, and I was stuck with these feelings and these thoughts that, oh my goodness, I am being replaced. Or World Championships this last year. All of a sudden, the day before the race, I was asked to make a change that just completely took away from my confidence. In a way, it was something simple, but it said to me, Melissa, we don't think you're ready, do it this way. That's not what they were saying, but that's how I read it. But that process that I shared with you became a cornerstone in my life. And when I was confronted with feeling replaced, and when I was confronted with no confidence the day before the race, I was able to reflect on it. And this giving thanks and just coming before God and giving it to Him, it gave me courage to do my best, to run the race marked out for me, and to run it with everything I had within me, with joy, with purpose, with passion, and with abundant life. If you want to just go to the last slide there. Yeah. So, I don't know where you guys find yourself today, what sort of challenges are in your life. Maybe they're big. Maybe it seems like you can't cope anymore. You're at your wit's end. Maybe they're small. Maybe it's your to-do list has run away on you, and you're like, how am I going to get this all done? Maybe work is crazy, or school is insanely busy, and you have deadlines upon deadlines upon deadlines, and no time to get things done. Maybe finances are tight, or maybe a loved one is sick, a parent, a spouse, a brother or sister, a child, yourself maybe. Wherever you find yourself, all this stuff that's been weighing you down, constantly on your mind, kind of nitpicking in the back there, it won't leave you alone. And you probably have asked yourself why. Like, why me? Why do I have to go through all this? Why is it happening? It's not fair. If you're tired of feeling anxious, or if you're tired of just worrying about things you can't control, if you're done with a like, little cloud of despair, like Eeyore walks around with, and he mopes around and all his friends are so gracious to him, if that cloud has been following you for one day, 1 hour, 1 minute too long, I just want to remind you that God's there. He's waiting for you just to lay it all down. And he's willing to take it upon himself. It says, right, his burden is easy, his yoke is light. And in Matthew, when Jesus is talking at the Sermon on the Mount, he says, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. He takes care of the birds of the air. He clothes the lilies of the field. And yet, in all of their beauty, look at Solomon. He wasn't as beautiful as the lilies, right? And so he says, are you not more valuable to God, to the Father, than these things, than the birds, than the lilies? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single moment to his life? So yeah, I just want to encourage you guys, big or small, God's there. He's a good Heavenly Father. He'll take care of us. And if you don't know God today as your Heavenly Father, you don't know Jesus as the Prince of Peace, that he died for your sins, that he came to give you a life abundant, he's there. He's there for you too. He just wants you to come to him, to give him your burdens, to give him your sins, to confess that Jesus Christ is Lord of your life. And wherever you're at, I just want you to come to him tonight.